Good morning, members. We have a quorum present. I will convene the Ways and Means Committee for today, Monday, May 7th, 2018. Representative Carlson, would you be so kind to move the minutes from the previous meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Minutes are moved from the previous meeting. Any discussion? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if
Representative,
being that you were in the chair, if you were going to break the pattern on the minutes, but
I am just privileged because I get to touch the new gavel, so I have the new walnut in my hand. First bill today is House File 3660, Representative Fenton. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the chair will move that HF 3660 be referred to the General Register. And I believe there's an author's amendment. And the chair will move
the chairman,
Representative Carlson.
I wonder, normally we just adopt an author's amendment, but this one here really, in a major way, changes the direction of the bill. So I wanted to just ask if, before we adopt the amendment, if we could hear from DNR and the Pollution Control Agency to get their thoughts on the amendment. It's really a very major amendment.
Okay, actually, Representative Carlson, they have asked to testify. If it would be okay, could we put it in the form and then have them testify after that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my thought was with this particular amendment, it would be good to hear from them before it's adopted. I mean, this is a huge sum of money, and there are some concerns by DNR and the PCA about the amendment. And once it's on the bill, it would be difficult to change direction. I just want to make sure people have the information about the amendment, and I think everybody knows or should know what the amendment contains.
Well, Representative, we will have the testimony from the Assistant Commissioner. My preference would be to, as long as it's the author's amendment, to put that in place, and then we can have the input and the discussion, and, of course, we'll still have the approval at the end as amended anyway before it would move on. So my preference as a chair would be to move the amendment now, get that out of the way, and then go into the discussion of the entire bill as it'll be structured.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason I raised the question is that the procedure then that we're following, the horse will be out of the barn, so to speak, and it will be very difficult once that amendment goes on to reverse direction. It may go on under either circumstance, but I just wanted people to be fully informed about the amendment before they vote on it, really on both sides of the aisle, because this is a major change in direction. There are several issues that surface, not the least of which is that Judge Burke, retains jurisdiction over the settlement, and with some of the changes in the amendment, it may raise some serious legal questions, some additional legal costs, if the lawsuit is or the agreement is reopened. Could be cost to the state of Minnesota as the major litigant, as well as the company involved, and perhaps even some of the communities. You know, for example, would a city like Woodbury be picking up part of the cost of a lawsuit if it were to take place? So that's a request that I have. You're obviously in the chair, and you can bring it to a vote, I guess, if you choose, but I would like the record to show that we requested testimony prior to the adoption of the amendment, because it is a major amendment.
Okay. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be appropriate to adopt the amendment at this point, because if we're going to have folks testifying on it, why would we have them testify if the amendment's not on and before us? Just a thought.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been the custom of this body, is that we put the bill in the order that the author wishes to have the bill in. That's not anything unusual, and so I would request that we move ahead with the motion.
At this point, let's move ahead. Let's enter the amendment for adoption, and we will have a full discussion, and I think that's the best way to proceed. So the chair moves the DE2 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to request a roll call.
Thank you. Roll call has been requested. Representative Fenton, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And what this is about is about accountability and transparency. I worked really hard. I did hear some concerns from the MPCA, and I addressed them in this amendment, so it's different from the one that was previously seen in this committee. But I'm also have also been working hard to address concerns of all of the mayors and city administrators in the cities that are directly impacted. So there are a few changes. One thing that I added in this language is that the money in the account may be invested through the State Board of Investment in the settlement. They do allow for earnings on the investment in the money in the account. Another change, and this was something that our cities were concerned about in the original bill, the cities directly impacted were not listed, and they really wanted that known, as we've heard, been out and heard some hearings or public hearings. Other people are coming who seem to want access. But we need to make sure that we take those directly impacted as the settlement dictates. So there's language in here that was taken directly out of the settlement, naming the cities, to enhance the quality, quantity, and sustainability of the drinking water in the East Metropolitan Area, which includes but is not limited to the cities of Woodbury, Oakdale, Lake Elmo, Cottage Grove, St. Paul Park, Afton, Newport, and the townships of Westlake and Gray Cloud, as well as ensuring the drinking water and sufficient supply to residents and businesses in the East Metropolitan Area to meet their current and future water needs, with priority given to projects that address drinking water supplies where health-based values or health risk limits for the PFC chemicals have been exceeded. That's directly out of the settlement. Projects that are technically feasible. The manner which ensures the first priority identified in the settlement agreement is met. That's as dictated by the settlement. There are three priorities. The first for water, the quality, quantity, sustainability, the water remediation. The second is environmental hazards as directly related to the first. And the third is, once you've finished one and two, then you are able, the MPCA, as by the settlement, will be able to move on. If there's any money left over, then they can do projects around the state that are outside of the affected areas. Under reporting, Commissioner, the one thing that I added was by January 15, an implementation plan detailing how the commissioners will determine how the priorities in the settlement are met and how the spending will move from the first and second priorities outlined in the settlement. Our cities have asked a question. How do you know you're done? When is done done? How do we know that we're all good to move on from one and two and move on to three? And also to for them to evaluate and determine what projects receive funding. I mean, how will they know, how will the cities know what and where these projects are, what's going to be funded? The other reporting language was already there, was approved by the MPCA in the original bill. Finally, Subdivision 6. This was another request of our cities. There's been discussion that one way to deal with this is for the East Metro to be hooked up to the St. Paul water. Our cities are against that. That is their last case scenario, they said. So Subdivision 6 just leaves control in the municipalities. Nothing in the section grants authority to the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency or Commissioner of Natural Resources to assume control or otherwise operate existing municipal water supply operations in the East Metropolitan Area. So it leaves authority in hands of the municipalities. They realize this still could happen, but they really want to have a significant say in it if it does. Finally, in Section 2, up through 3M, that is a language that was in the original bill, but again, they wanted to make sure that the cities, municipalities most affected were listed here and have input. So I just reiterate that the commissioners must establish a process to solicit and evaluate the recommendations from each of the cities of Woodbury, Oakdale, Lake Elmo, Cottage Grove, St. Paul Park, Afton, Newport, and the townships of West Lakeland and Gray Cloud. That's, again, there's some details of that spelled out in paragraph 17 of the settlement. It's just input and process from these cities. The MPCA has already started that. Our cities have been giving some input. The rest of the language is all as approved in the original House File 3660. So I worked really hard with our nonpartisan legal counsel in the revisor's office and had all of this run through, not just the person I work with, but ask that it be run through others, and we feel that this does balance the concerns. It applies accountability and transparency while respecting the settlement. And with that, I will say, I mean, I understand that the judge is that oversaw the settlement. He would see any disputes between 3M and the state of Minnesota. Now, the money, nobody can go back on this agreement. The money is already in the bank. So I am trying, and I have talked with MPCA DNR. This is a work in progress as it moves forward, but I really want to balance and hear the concerns that we're hearing from our city administrators and our mayors. And I'm joined here by many of us that are affected. I want to thank Representative Juergens, Representative Frankie, Representative Lohmer, Representative Ward for being here with us today. Representative Lilly obviously could not be. But this is a work in progress, and I think everybody will continue working together as this moves forward.
Thank you. The chair will move the DE2. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Vogel?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Baker?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
Yes.
Representative Dean?
Yes.
Representative Detmer?
Yes.
Representative Draskowski?
Yes.
Representative Fabian?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Gunther?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Houseman?
No.
Representative Hertas?
Yes.
Representative Pilstrom?
No.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Liebling?
No.
Representative Loon?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Murphy? Representative Nornes? Representative Pulowski? Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Wagenius?
No.
There being 14 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment is adopted. The bill is now in the form of the author's intent. At this point, we will open up to member discussion. We did have a testifier. I'm not sure when that might fit in best. Is there any initial questions to the bill author? Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Chair. Representative Fenton, in the agreement and order, the order defines the state as the Attorney General, the Pollution Control Agency, and the DNR. And it, the order says the state shall do these things, and it has these priorities. And you listed some of those priorities. But in your amendment, the Attorney General doesn't appear. Can you help us out with that?
Representative Fenton.
In terms of what part of, can you please tell me which line you're discussing? I mean, I took.
Okay. All right. I'll look at.
Representative Wiggins.
Thank you. 1.14, it says the commissioners must, yet the order and agreement says the commissioners plus the Attorney General. So I'm asking for you to help us out and explain why the Attorney General isn't here.
Representative Fenton.
As related to the and that's a great question, because my city did, that was one of the questions from the city, is who actually, is these working groups, who will be the major deciding head at the table? But they do give, the money is put into the account, and that authority is granted to the MPCA to actually be able to use those monies and the DNR. So I took it from... the payment is made starting with Section 13, Paragraph 13. 3M will make a grant in the amount of $850 million to the state, which shall be held in the 3M Grant for Water Quality and Sustainability Fund within 15 days. Then Paragraph 14 states that the MPCA and or DNR shall use the grant and any interest earned or any other appreciation and value for projects that are reasonable and necessary to achieve the purposes of this agreement. So I see them giving the authority to the MPCA and or the DNR, and that's where I got this.
Representative Wagenius.
But that's not my question. In the order and the agreement, it specifically says the state is defined as three groups, the AG, the PCA, and the DNR. You have left out the AG as a decision maker, and I am asking why.
Representative Fenton.
They also were not in the original House File 3660. So that's something I'm willing to work in PCA. And DNR, I mean, like I said, this bill is a work in progress. And that was not in the original file, House file as well. But the focus as you go through the priorities is the MPCA and the DNR working within the cities that are mainly affected. So that's – but I'm not opposed to – if that's something that's being requested, I can look into that.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fenton, on 2.3 in the bill, it says that no more than 10% can be used for administrative expenses between the cities and the agencies. That seems like a very high percentage. Some of the numbers I remember seeing in the areas, and maybe... Chair Fabian can speak to this, but I remember some of the DNR areas, 2 to 5% seems to be normal. Why are we at 10% being used for administrative expenses? And especially the concern here is in light of all the money that we see being sucked up by the agencies out of the legacy money, very little of that getting to the ground, and the agencies seem to be flourishing and growing. So I'd hate to see that happen here.
Representative Benton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski. That has been a concern from our cities. They think it's too high because at 10% for administrative costs, that would be $885 million from the total, if you look at the total settlement, and it would be another $85 million for studies. And some of the cities have said, I like that you have caps, because then we all know what we're working with on that bottom line in those areas. What I did was I went back and I took the 10% from guidelines put out relating to these types of settlements put out by the department, the federal level, the Department of Justice in 2015. It used to be 8%. They raised it to 10. I've asked for recommendation from the NPCA and DNR, and I haven't gotten a number from them, but the cities like the parameters. The question is it too high? And I think that's a discussion we need to have going forward. But at least if we have something, and if something is agreed upon, then everybody knows what that bottom line is and what we're working with moving forward as things are done.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fenton. I agree. I think we need to definitely have a cap on there. At some point, I'd even be willing to offer a 1% motion if you'd entertain that. But I think it needs to be severely reduced from where it is, and we really need to take a look at what's going on in the other special funds in the DNR and MPCA. I think they're all very well south of 5%, maybe even in the 2% area. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fenton, now that you've added the cities and those that are affected into the decision-making about where the money should be spent, currently, the Minnesota Attorney General's office does not have jurisdiction to act as a lawyer for people who've suffered individual personal injury or property damage. Now that those people who may have privately suffered damage are going to be listed specifically in your bill, does that preclude your constituents or your cities or your counties from also suing 3M with a class action lawsuit for the damage that they have suffered?
Representative Fenton.
Which section are you referring to in the bill in terms of listing the cities? And are you talking about under the expenditures?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm talking about the stakeholders that you identify for the expenditures. Now that you have listed that the commissioners must solicit evaluation from each of your cities, so in West Virginia, for example, several law firms filed a personal injury lawsuit against DuPont for disposal of PFCs that they used to make Teflon. Lawyers in that class action lawsuit were successful in getting about $671 million in payments to the class. Those are the individuals that were damaged. The state's lawsuit took care of the state's damages, but now you are injecting the city and local folks into how that money should be spent. Does your bill then keep individuals or your local community from filing a class action lawsuit against 3M if they, in fact, find that they've had individual private property damage or individual harm? Doesn't your bill cause damage to your local constituents?
Representative Fenton.
I disagree, because in the statement they are required, in the settlement, they are required to establish a working group consisting of the cities in the East Metropolitan area. And also in the settlement, again, as the first and highest priority, the MCA and the DNR shall utilize the grant for the purposes, the quality and sustainability of water. The cities are listed in the settlement. I took that straight out of the settlement. Again, this is accountability and transparency to make sure that the water remediation, the environmental hazards, are dealt with in the most effective committee. As much of that money stays going directly to the remediation and the environmental cleanup as per the settlement.
Mr. Representative Fabian.
Well, just to that point, and I ask to be recognized, and if Representative Hillstrom wants to continue, I'll come back. I out of respect for her, but however you would like to do that, Mr. Chair.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to a different point, so if he wants to address the point that I made, he should do it, but then I would like it back because I have another round.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. Well, and maybe nonpartisan or staff can help me out, but as I remember this and have listened to it, the lawsuit was about natural resource damages. It wasn't about individual damages. And I don't see anything in the bill that limits someone's ability to be able to, I'll say, sue for health damages or something, but maybe staff can help me out a little bit on that question.
Any comments?
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have the complaint or the amended complaint in front of me. I apologize, so I can't look at sort of the scope of the original complaint and who the damages or who the compensation was intended to benefit. My memory is consistent with yours, Representative Fabian, but I can't confirm that. Don't have the documents with me today.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, so just so the folks that are watching at home understand that this lawsuit relates to the 100 square miles of underground plume of PFC chemicals in the East Metropolitan area, and 3M has paid the state a restricted grant for the primary purpose of clean drinking water for communities that were contaminated by their actions. So, Representative Fenton, in the event the court deems your statute to interfere with that settlement and says you now don't have a settlement, have you had conversations with 3M and your local cities and counties about who's going to pay the legal fees for taking this case back to a trial space, which is where they were prior to the settlement?
Representative Fenton.
Again, I have had conversations with our cities, and the money is already in there, and this added language is directly from the settlement. I'm not telling the cities to tell the MPCA how to spend the money, but they do need to, they are seeking input from all of the cities affected. And my goal is to make sure that our cities, that the money from the settlement remains among the priorities of the settlement, water remediation, environmental, to make sure, ensure that the constituencies of all of these cities know that they have quality, quantity, and sustainability of clean drinking water, and along with the hazardous cleanup. So the cities are not going to tell them, but they are seeking input, and the cities should have input as, they've worked with the MPCA, DNR, all of the time related to these issues. Again, and going to working with nonpartisan and legal to make sure that what we do is provide transparency and accountability while respecting the agreement if nothing has been brought up. But this is a work in progress by all of our cities along with the MPCA and the DNR because they've never dealt with something this large before. So I assume, that there's a good reason that they settled when they asked for $5 billion and the state settled for $850 million instead of going on to trial. I don't know what that reason is, but...
Mr. Chair.
I want to just add one more thing. It is my, from reading the agreement, and if you haven't, it's only 11 pages long. From the agreement, only the Attorney General or the state agencies could actually reopen the case. So if they want to reopen the settlement, that would be a great disservice to the constituencies in these affected areas.
We have two more people that want to ask a few questions, and then we have a testifier. So at this point, I'm going to go to Representative Wagenius, then I'm going to go to Representative Anderson, and then we will have Mr. Kirkadalka from the Assistant Commissioner from the MPCA. So Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to go back to a couple of the things you said. I'm looking at Section 2, which is the stakeholders group. And I know that the court order said that you're to have a working group, and that's how you characterized it. But this is different because you have a stakeholders include, at a minimum, representatives of the agency, that's PCA, and DNR. So you're having the agency be in a group that makes recommendations to the agency. That's not...
That's the judge's agreement.
Representative
that is directly from the agreement. That's where I took it. Right out, and that is paragraph, let me get it so I can read it and make sure that that is accurate. Yeah, so that's from paragraph 7 of the page 5 of the settlement. And this also, that language right up there with ending with 3M Company is directly out of the settlement, but that was in the original House file language as well as and agreed upon by all of the stakeholders.
Representative Anderson.
Oh, wait. Mr. Chair, I had...
Representative Pugenius, one question, and we have to get to the testifier. We do have two more bills, so just want to make sure we move through.
Thank you for that explanation. I'm going now to subdivision 6 with the state authority. This reminds me of a lot of the White Bear Lake agreement, where there was the discussion about the... It's not sustainable to keep on drawing from the aquifers that these cities that you represent are doing. So if you cannot draw from the aquifer because it's not sustainable and you can't hook up to other systems, what's the solution?
So
and then let me just ask... one of the things that has been on the table in the White Bear Lake was the possibility of having a new drinking water treatment system on the Mississippi that would serve your cities. How does this particular subdivision fit into that?
I know Representative Anderson has a question as well. I really want to get to the testifier. If you want Representative Fenton, then we're going to go to Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there are a lot of options. There are several. All of the cities can come together and have one huge treatment facility that would work for everything. This just makes sure that the municipalities have a say in what does happen if they're going to take the water authority out from under them. This is back to local control and allowing municipalities to really have that say. I don't think there's anything in here that say would prevent the NPCA from hooking up to St. Paul Water if that's what needs to happen, but it does try, as the municipalities want it, to have that that say if that's something that's going to happen.
Representative Anderson.
And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief. Just one comment and then one question. I would recommend, Representative Benton, that you consider what we've done in other areas of budgeting on the take that the state can take out of this fund for administrative fees. I think that the more money that we can get to the communities that are impacted by this, the better off that we would be in state government finance. We've set that fee at 3%. For takeaways from different grants that we have allocated through state government finance. We encourage you to look at that as a better way. And even at 3%, that's over $20 million that the agencies that would get for agency fees, administrative fees. So encourage you to look at that. Then also, without this language, Representative Fenton, is it possible that we could see the funding not going to these communities? You've outlined it here that these communities would directly receive this benefit. Without this language, is there the possibility that we would see the funding going elsewhere and not helping the people that were actually impacted by this?
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. I think anything is possible. Again, this is accountability and transparency to keep as much of this money in these affected communities. I mean, it was $850 million. There's another $40 million, so $890. $20 million was in the number two priority. So you've got to deal with number one and then number two, and then once you've dealt with those and you feel that you've done your job, you can go spend that money anywhere else, according to Section 3, third priority of the settlement. So I think anything is possible, and my goal is to protect as much of this funds for that remediation in these affected communities, because at the end of, as things move forward, how do you really know you're done? That's a question that is asked of our cities. When is done? How do you know that you're there where you can move on from one and two and on to three? So thank you for asking that, and so noted in terms of the caps.
Okay. With that, we're going to move on to the testifier, Assistant Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair, before we do that,
Representative.
If I might, Representative Tony Juergens, and I appreciate the questions because nobody's intent is to jeopardize the settlement, but what we want to do is have some guardrails around this money so that the majority of this money, as much as possible, all of it, can go help the people of our districts and clean drinking water. That's what this is about. We don't want this to go into the third priority, which says if everything else is done, then the third priority takes over and the money can be used throughout the state of Minnesota. Because in our opinion, it should never get to that third priority. The PFCs are not going away. They're going to be in people's water long after we're gone. And we're just trying to give the people, the residents of our districts, a little say in that. We just want them to be able to have a little bit of say in what that solution is. Maybe the solution is hooking up to the St. Paul drinking water, but they don't want that thrust upon them. They want a say in that. They want to be at the table, and that's what we're trying to do. Is this bill language perfect? Probably not. Is 10% the right amount? I don't know. I'd like to see it lower, too. But we have to have something in there, and so I appreciate all of your time today. And I know you want to get to testifiers. I do have a quick question, Mr. Chair. We do have letters of support from a couple of cities. I'm not sure if that's in your packet or not, but if not, I would like to ask the page to pass those out, please.
Thank you. We'll have them passed out.
Thank you.
Assistant Commissioner, if you'd come forward, please.
Because that's the way they're testifying.
If you'd welcome. Good morning.
Thank
please
you,
identify yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kudelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I want to thank the author. There have been changes here, and we appreciate those changes around the state board investment and how those dollars can be taken care of. However, we still have our underlying concerns with the amendment that was in the omnibus bill still reign here. While the section subdivision on prioritization is taken out, the expenditure piece still creates a different type of decisions on where things go. And our concern is that we're creating two different lists, one under the agreement and one under the legislation on how the dollars can be spent. And we understand emphasizing certain things from the agreement, but when you only choose certain things, you leave things out either intentionally or unintentionally. And we have a couple examples of that. And one is the term health index is missing on communities that need this match. And this is something that the state fought very hardly and continues to fight with because it's something that the responsible party has not always agreed with us on. And it's not, we don't believe that's an intent to leave that out, but it just goes to show that if you only select certain things, you're bound to forget something and not put it in. And no matter how we paraphrase it or the settlement, it creates those problems. We believe we should rely on the language that's already in the bill that specifically on line 1.12 and 1.13 says all the purposes authorized under the settlement. That makes sure we cover everything under the settlement and not leave anything out. The other problem with subdivision 3 is that installs new terminology that's not mentioned anywhere in the settlement, including technical and feasible piece for projects. And we bring this up because of new technology being pioneered by the University of Minnesota that may allow for us to capture PFCs in ways that we didn't envision previously. One may argue that a new technology that's never been tested before may not be technically feasible and creates a problem if we as a group, East Metro Communities and others, decide that this is something to take a pilot project or other types of efforts to deal with PFCs in the area. And the other item is what the section doesn't talk about, and that's priority 2, and I know my colleague from DNR will talk a little bit more about that, so I'll pass on that piece for now. The other piece does deal with the reporting limit, subdivision 4. Again, we have concerns on these numbers, not at what they're at, but how are they figured? If we look at the total amount of the settlement, $850 million, the state has already exceeded the 10%. If you look at the legal consultant and other types of fees, and so that puts us into a situation. The other question is, what are studies? Is that a feasibility study we may do for TERPs, for various projects, design studies, those kind of things? Without defining those terms, we create a situation where we may, again, inadvertently run over certain things, depending on what is administrative, what is studies, what is project work. And we just believe that having that flexibility there to follow recommendations of the communities would be better. We do realize that the state and also the counties are going to need resources to be able to do this in the speed that others are requesting. The additional reporting language that we had a quick opportunity to talk to the author about, these are things that we do have to work on in the working group, and we need input. We won't have all of it defined by January 15th, learning from the author that it is not necessarily critical to have everything defined, because there are certain things, types of projects, where we're going to have to phase this. The natural resource restoration stuff will be something later in the process, and it's not something we will have criteria built by January 15th for. Just in summary, our concern is that this does create this dual system, one of the legislation and the settlement, and the potential for additional lawsuits, which only delays the investment in these communities and the area's natural resources. We're also concerned about that we haven't had the work groups start yet and their conversations. We haven't heard from individual citizens, local units of government, not only the cities, but the others in the community, the soil and water conservation districts, the watershed districts, and others that are going to have a crucial role in this process. The underlying bill worked. What we'd like to say is let the work groups meet, have the discussion of potential projects, and let's the open, transparent, and balanced process that's envisioned in the settlement agreement play out before we start making recommendations. And with that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'd like to turn over my colleague, if that's okay.
Certainly.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And while we fully understand what the local representatives are trying to do, and we want to work with them and the citizens to make sure the money is appropriately spent, without language relating to what we're considering priority two or the natural resource damages, we're concerned that will be left aside and we'll spend all the money trying to protect and ensure the water sustainability. As you may be aware of, last week the Department of Health issued a total fish consumption advisory ban on Lake Elmo. So this lake contained crappies, bullhead, bass, northern pike, rainbow trout, walleye in particular. So there are natural resource damages that need to be addressed as well. We would recognize the top priority is ensuring water quality and sustainability issues long term. We do need to make sure that we are preserving and leaving room and language for those natural resources damages to be addressed as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Entertain some Representative Fenton, any comments?
Again, we've talked. I'm willing to work with them. We have worked. I have heard concerns. The bill has already changed. Again, we just want to make sure that we do respect the agreement while having transparency and accountability and input from all of the cities weigh in. And you talked about the health indexes. You know, it is the language in that section does pretty much line up with the settlement, because but it says where health-based values, health risk limits, and or health risk indices are exceeded. So we did leave that out, but this is a work in progress. I've asked for input, and I look forward to continuing to work with them so that we can get to something where all the stakeholders are comfortable.
Thank you. We do have five testifiers, Representative Fabian, five questioners, Representative Fabian, Anderson, Draskowski, Hillstrom, and Gunther. I'd ask if you could keep the questions rather tight, as we have two other bills and we want to make sure that we're out of here on time. Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I will try. The reason we are here where we are today is because it's obvious to me that the, quote, state has not convinced the East Metro communities that the guidelines, the transparency, and the guardrails that they are very interested in are not in the agreement, and they want to be heard, and they want to make sure that they have a place at the table when the decisions are made about how $850 million are going to be spent. And quite frankly, I don't quite understand the weeping and gnashing of teeth that's going on here regarding their concerns and openness and transparency. Assistant Commissioner Kadelka, I listened to your testimony. It seems to me now that you're advocating that the underlying language in the bill is actually acceptable to you. Is that correct?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the original House file was something that we had supported earlier when it went through committee and still do. It's the amendments that have taken place on the omnibus bill and here where we oppose.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it sounded to me like you were more interested in the language that was in between those. But specifically, Commissioner and Commissioner Meyer, what conversations have you had with the East Metro communities regarding the settlement and their feelings about the bill that, that the people that represent the East Metro are bringing forward and their concerns?
To the testifiers.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we've had several meetings. We've had a number of conference calls that have included all the local units of government in the East Metropolitan area. We've met face-to-face with them in Washington County and actually have another meeting this afternoon on the issue. We've met with individual communities to deal with their individual situations, whether it's Lake Elmo or St. Paul Park or others, as we continue to work through this. We've had an open process where public meetings, three in the East Metropolitan area, with over 100 people attending each of the meetings. We have had a request for comment period on the work group draft proposal we've put out to anticipate how local units of government, cities, watershed districts, but also individuals. There was a lot of discussion with the public meetings about individuals being part of this process in addition to local units of government. So we've had a lot of conversations to start with, and we will continue down that track as we work through the open and transparent process envisioned in the settlement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well,
Representative Fabian.
More specifically, I guess I'm concerned more about questions related specifically to the language that we have before us today and your communications with the city. We obviously have letters of support for what the representatives from the East Metro are doing. Again, I, from day one when we went over to the Capitol and we had conversations about the settlement, I started hearing about fishing piers. I started hearing about cleaning up other projects around the state of Minnesota. I think it would be doing a huge disservice to the settlement if we were to venture off and start doing projects in, say, Roseau County or Beltrami County or something like that. And specifically, I'm asking this kind of a generic question of people. Specifically, what language in the bill is kind of blowing up or destroying the settlement? Because right now I see that what we're doing here is giving the folks in the East Metro more of a say in how the money should be spent and what it should be spent on, and putting some guardrails in place. And I don't like the idea, and pardon the pun, but there seems to me to be kind of a plume over openness and transparency, and I wish that the agencies would be a little more receptive to openness and transparency. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm looking at this language, we are probably looking at $140 million that you are looking at. There's a, as the language is drafted, there's $140 million that would be spent for just administrative costs. At first, I thought it was just 10% right off the top. We're actually talking about $140 million. And, Mr. Kudelka, you think that that's too little? We're now up well over, we're talking close to $300 million that we would take out of the settlement just for administrative fees. No help to the people at all. That's just bureaucracy. Close to $300 million being spent on bureaucracy and not to help the people. This is ridiculous. The fact that you're coming here and saying that this is not enough, tell me how much is enough. When you get every last dime of it and none of it goes to the people, are we going to have a little plaque that says, here, we addressed this issue, we heard your concerns, this is what you get out of it? I applaud Representative Fenton to tackle this issue, but this is ridiculous. When you can't do this job with close to $300 million for administrative and bureaucracy of money, it just blows my mind. This is why people get upset with government, because they see things like this and say, this is not how the money should be spent. Close to $300 million on just bureaucracy. That's a travesty. Representative Fenton, applaud your work. I hope that you continue to tighten this up.
Representative Gaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have similar comments. Representative Fenton, I like the bill. I think you're doing a good job, a great job for your constituents in making certain the money gets to them. I would just caution you and the other authors and supporters of this, and we heard Mr. Kudelka representing the interests of government. The interests of government will have their teeth out as they see a new host coming along in which they can start to parasitize. That's what we have happen when we have big globs of money like this come before these very hungry bureaucracies. And line 2.3 and up to 2.5, it's 10% not only for administrative expenses in here. Mr. Kudelka, this is 10% of money in the account, if you would read the bill closely. And then also another 10% for studies. Another way to tighten it up, Representative Fenton, might be to say that on studies that can only be done on entities outside of government might be really a good approach to go. I just caution the supporters of this bill that the agencies and the cities are going to want as much money as they can get out of here as possible. That's what you already saw today. That's what many of us around this table have seen happen over and over again. This part needs some very tough scrutiny, and when you do that, you'll have a very, very good bill. Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fenton, for providing these letters. I read the Cottage Grove letter, and I'd like to point out one of the paragraphs that you address. So in your amendment, you specifically place these limitations at 10% of the money that can be spent on administrative fees, and you did it both for the state and the local community. And in Cottage Grove's letter, they said, while some limits on administrative costs should be in place, we are uncertain if 8 or 10% of the account is the best limits to use. We expect the city and consultant fees for legal, administrative, design, inspection, and testing for a water treatment facility to cost between 18 and 30% of the project cost. So you're capping what your local units of government would be able to be reimbursed under this. And so is Cottage Grove, for example, willing to pay the rest of the administrative costs to implement these? And have you talked with them about that?
Mr. Chair, I think what you see in the letter from the city of Cottage Grove is, and similar to what I said earlier, I don't know what the right amount is. Is it 4%? Is it 8%? Is it 10%? But they agree that there should be some limits in place, and that's what they were intending in that paragraph.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom, and please, we do have to move this on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll just make one comment. So then what happens by you putting the local administrative expenses in here as well as you're saying that your local unit of government is going to pay the expense to do these particular projects if the state can't, if they're doing them. And so you have to understand that you're passing on the cost to your constituents, probably through property taxes. But the last point that I'm going to make is that one of the pieces of the settlement was that if the $890 million is exhausted at some point in the future and drinking water problems remain, the company will still continue to pay for those fixes under a settlement or the consent order under the PCA of 2007. Have you confirmed that the statutory changes that you're proposing will not allow 3M to get out from under their responsibility? Because you keep saying we need to know when we're done, but there's going to be pollution for a long time, and this settlement acknowledges that. I don't think your statute does, and I'll end up with that.
Representative Gunther.
I have had my questions answered.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation after Representative Fabian's comments. The weeping and gnashing is because we fear unintended consequences, that the result of this amendment is that we do damage to those cities because we go beyond the settlement in terms of specificity. And my sense is the problematic part is Subdivision 3 expenditures that we should have stopped with. Money in the account is appropriated for the purposes authorized under the settlement. The specificity, then, is a problem, and particularly line 123. And so I'm hoping maybe, Representative Fenton, you will continue to take a look at that part of the bill.
Okay. No more questions. We're going to have to move on. The Chair renews his motion that House File 3660, as amended, be referred to the General Ledger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. We're on to the General Ledger. Thank you. General Register.
General Ledger.
I've been around the banking thing too long.
General Ledger.
The next bill, House File 3463, Representative Petersburg. As the representative is moving up here, the chair moves that House File 3463 be referred to the General Register. There is an author's amendment, and the chair will move the 810 amendment to get the bill in the form the author desires. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. 810 is adopted. Representative Peterson, or Petersburg, to your amended bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. I appreciate this hearing this bill before you. This bill really is designed to help with some of the negative fallout after the rollout of MNLARS last summer. And whereas it primarily deals with some issues around the auto dealers, it does deal with deputy registers as well as an advisory committee also. So I'll briefly talk about the 12 provisions in this particular bill, and then I'll stand for questions. The first section refers to a relationship between the auto manufacturers and the auto dealers in regards to some of the rebates and promotions that you see on TV all the time, trying to get you to buy their new vehicles. But because of the delay in getting the titles transferred, a lot of dealers are concerned about whether or not they're going to get the incentives from the manufacturer. The manufacturer is very much aware of this, too, and is working with the dealers. And this language in here is approved by both. And they really wish to move forward. The second provision deals with the documentation, supporting documentation, as well as allowing the dealers to actually set the price of the vehicle for registration, licensing fees, et cetera. Since they're the ones that are selling it, they have the best value. Obviously, the Department of Vehicle Service would have the right to audit that information, and they are required to maintain records of that. The third section has to do with prorated registration. Much like when you buy a house, you don't pay for all the property tax as a purchaser. You only pay for the part you have. In this particular case, tab fees and license fees are really designed for those vehicles on the road. Now, when they're sitting in the lot, they're not in the road, and so this just gives them an opportunity to prorate basically on whatever the vehicle is on the road, which seems like a reasonable piece. Number four, section four, has to do with the situation where a dealer may have various other entities out there. One could be in Grand Forks, one could be in Rochester, And rather than having to, every time you move a vehicle from one location to the other, to have to change the title, this just allows you to be able to use the same title as long as it's the same entity that, that particular owns it. So that's the piece there. In regards to Minlar specific, Section 5 deals with the ability for the dealer, auto dealers who do a lot of the transactions for Minlars, that there would be whatever is appropriate, a liaison or a designated person that they could call to have their questions answered. After all, it's no fun for a dealer to sit with a vehicle that they want to sell, can't get information, and so therefore the sale doesn't occur. The same thing occurs in regards to late fees. Oftentimes, the title may be sent to the state, to the department, and because of delays in getting it entered, it falls beyond the 10-day period in which then there's that $2 late fee. This bill just repeals that $2 late fee for dealers who actually provide that service. In regards to Section 7, it deals with the electronic vehicle transfer and registration programs that are out there and the various software packages that are being used in other states and so forth. Basically, it says that if the department allows for electronic vehicle transfer and registration, that they hold reasonable standards and allow reasonable access to all the companies that have the appropriate software. Again, in essence, still trying to protect the integrity of the system. Section 8 deals with the ability of auto dealers to be able to look up information on a title. Now, there are, I think, 14 different options given to by the federal system allowing for lookups. This only specifies the four that are necessary for auto dealers to look up. They are a theft. They want to make sure that they aren't trying to sell a stolen car. They also would like the ability to look up if they need to ensure information accuracy. Also, if a vehicle gets towed to their particular property, they would like to know who the owner is. That's the third one. And then the fourth one is if there's the consent by the owner to get that information. So those are the only four permits that they're allowed to look up, and we think that's appropriate. The ninth is a somewhat controversial issue, but one that we started the process last year, and that is last year we gave the deputy registrars the authority to create and reproduce duplicate titles. This actually gives the deputy registrars the ability to actually issue the title. Mm-hmm. Now, wanting to make sure that we protect the integrity of the system, these are only given, this option is given after the commissioner has actually set out the responsibilities and directions and protections necessary. So the commissioner would develop the proper procedures, and then the titles could be issued by the deputy registrars. 10 and 11 have to do with repossession and lien perfections. When an auto dealer has a certain right to the particular property and it gets repossessed, the person that is being repossessed doesn't always want to give up the title easily, and so this gives opportunity for them to go ahead and get that title just like any other person. Lien perfection just allows the dealers, when they have satisfied it, the lien, give that information to the banking industry so that they have information that indeed the process is moving forward. Now, that may or may not satisfy all of the contract language of the bank, but at least it gives them notice that information is going on. And the final piece is an advisory committee that is created by many different groups that are stakeholders to give some advice and some direction in regards to how Minlars is working and how to move forward. And the final piece that I would just comment is the need for the amendment. The amendment is actually to deal with an unseen large fiscal note of over $4 million for implementing this particular bill. We knew there would be some cost, never expected to be this level. And so this puts in a funding mechanism that we believe would cover this. There are some issues that I'm sure the department will be concerned with, but it does keep us balanced with the systems moving forward, et cetera. And I am also concerned about what I think is a way of getting funding for MNLARS that isn't necessarily directly related to this particular bill, but that is my opinion only. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will certainly stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative. I believe there is somebody here from DPS that wants to testify. Why don't we have that first, and then we'll go to member questions. Good morning, and welcome to the committee. Would you please identify yourself for the record?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Don Olson. I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services at the Department of Public Safety. My comments today are brief, but I do want to speak to the amendment and our concerns that are regarding the amount of money that would be taken from our current operating fund, whether it's the Driver Services Operating Fund or the potential for the related service, Driver and Vehicle Services fund that is being discussed this legislative session. As many members are aware, there are several bills that are going through this legislative process that do directly impact our special revenue funds. We have raised these issues and concerns in other committees as well to be cognizant and aware of the funds that are being requested and how ultimately that's going to operate, how that will impact our ability to operate as a division. So with that, I'll stand for any additional questions.
Member questions. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I share the department's concern about the amendment. I know we didn't really have a chance to discuss the amendment, but if so, I might have moved to divide it between 1.7 and 1.8, but that being the case, maybe there'll be other opportunities down the line to do that. My concern is that, and I support the appropriation, I support the In large part, the improvements that you're proposing, Representative Petersburg. But, you know, I think to start to appropriate the money by cutting executive agencies in the general fund, you know, it could be Veterans Affairs, it could be nursing homes, it could be corrections, it could be state parks, it could be education, on down the line. And there has to be a better way to fund this. And so my concerns really are with 1.8 through 1.12. Not necessarily appropriating money. We need to appropriate money for this. I support that. But I think this is going to be highly problematic if those lines remain in the bill.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have a concern with paragraph B, but I wonder if somebody could give an explanation to the last part of that paragraph where it says, in conjunction with reductions to the general fund appropriation for executive agencies operating expenditures. Now, when the state government finance bill went through, there was a reduction in state agencies and some shifting of dollars. Now, is this going to be in addition to what was in the state government finance bill? Or will it be a part of what was done in the state government finance bill? The language here, at least in my reading of it, when it just simply says in conjunction with, I could interpret that either way. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether that would be maybe a question for Representative Anderson, because she was the chief author of the state government finance bill, or one of the fiscal analysts.
Chair Anderson, would you... Want to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. This is part of the provision that was in the state government finance bill on the clawback for MNLARS. And so this is coming out of that clawback provision. So to address your concerns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm still not clear if that means that the number just grew relative to the funding here or not.
Representative Anderson.
We didn't really have a hard and fast number, if I recall, in the state government finance bill relative to the cuts.
Representative?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, yes, we did. That amount is roughly $10 million and some change is part of that amount. And so this is coming out of that amount, which we did not spend as part of state government finance.
Okay, so that
Representative
$10 million didn't grow then. This comes within that $10 million then. Is that what I'm hearing?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that is correct.
I think maybe as this moves forward, there should be some clarification of that, but at least the record shows that it's within the 10.
Other member questions? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, we have about a $4 million fiscal impact here, or fiscal note that is articulated by the department in response to this bill. Where does that money go? Does that end up funding MNLARS, or what does that fund? I guess would be one question. And then related to that, Director, is that I had a bill last year that was signed into law that gives deputy registrars the ability to print duplicate titles. The fiscal note at that time was for $275,000 or 1,490 hours. In this bill, in order for deputy registrars to print original titles, it's apparently, according to your estimates, $4 million instead of $275,000 and 30,000 hours instead of 1,490. How did we get inflated from $275,000 last year to $4 million this year to go from printing duplicate titles to original titles? You would expect you would expect it probably be cheaper, but I'm wondering if you could respond to that.
Director Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to ask Joan Redwing for a minute to come to the table and answer that question, as that those are programming costs.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joan Redwing, and I'm the acting CBTO, interim CBTO of Department of Public Safety and chief architect for the state of Minnesota.
Did you hear the question, or would you like it repeated?
No, I heard the question.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, it's really important to me that this body understands the full nature of the estimate that we presented along with this bill, and it's not restricted to duplicate title printing or origination of titles, but there are a number of components to this bill that require significant program changes of work that's already been completed. If I may, I'd like to walk through the bill and itemize the things that we've estimated with our team.
Sure. Go ahead. Thank you.
On section 3.30, page 3 on my version, the exercise right of first refusal will result in the dealers and dealers' owners receiving the same or greater consideration with equivalent terms of sale. This section requires us to take a look at tracking and workflow within the system to determine if there's any delay on that's accounted for in this section and who is responsible for that delay. So we potentially, it looks like we will need more GUI screens, more screens around this, potentially more reporting and more history tracking in this section to accommodate this section in the application. And this is functionality that's not currently in scope for the application in our roadmap or in our timeline. So this would be an addition for us.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Redwing, can you clarify, did you say 3.30 or 5.30?
3.30.
Ms. Redwing. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's current law.
Representative.
Let's see if I'm looking.
So is your fiscal note based off of current law?
No. Let me double check that I've got the right version here.
Mm-hmm. Find information.
Oh, it's lined is new. Yeah. So let me see if I'm looking at. I may have an older version. Yes, I do. All right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I'm sorry. You're right. 530. You are correct. Thank you.
Well,
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
As Ms. Redwing was discussing this issue, she was referring to current law. And I'm just curious, at what point did you base your fiscal note, if you were looking off of the item that you're looking off now? Obviously, you were looking at current law. So I'm concerned that the fiscal note was drafted in error in the first place.
No,
Ms. Redwing.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I wrote my note on the wrong line. I was referring to 5.30. So I was just taking additional notes for this hearing, specifically based on our analysis, and I wrote the note on the wrong line, but it is 5.30. And that is where we're really looking at. This is making sure that we are measuring any delays in the system and are able to report them. The next section.
So with that, Mr. Chair, could I?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. So, Ms. Redwing, can you point us to the point in the fiscal note that you're talking about?
Ms. Redwing.
I did not call out every single feature in the fiscal note. I just, in the assumptions for the fiscal note, this would be included in the total hours that we estimated. I can take the fiscal note back and itemize it by these sections.
Can you point where the, excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you point to the section of the fiscal note that reflects those total numbers?
Ms. Redway.
Yes. Let's see. Okay. I believe it is in. Section 12, the programming hours.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I already have that circled, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Ms. Redley?
All right. Section 7.20, 7.21, listing by dealers. This is changes to dealers' registration tax for vehicles held for resale, modifying how registration is handling that. So this appears to be...
Mr. Chair?
Representative Drazkowski?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Redwing is referring to current law once again, so I'm wondering... Ms. Redwing, your preparation appears to be around current law and not the bill, because we're seeing the same incongruence with the bill, or at least the explanation.
Ms. Redwing?
Mr. Chair, it's the underlined section in 7.31 and the underlined section in 7.27. And if we look at the underlined sections in this, the material change is a registration tax credit.
Chair Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, given the fact that we have two examples of minute describing current law that was part of their fiscal note analysis, I think it would be helpful for the committee to have a line-by-line example given by minute of exactly how they arrived at these numbers. I am very concerned that they were developed based off of current law and not what the actual bill changes, and I'm not getting a whole lot of comfort as we proceed with this line-by-line itemization that isn't even related to the change in law.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Welcome. Chair, my name is John Eichter. I'm Minute Services Legislative Director. I want to apologize for any confusion. Ms. Redwing's notes were prepared to HF 3463, the first engrossment, so we can crosswalk them over to HF 3463, the third engrossment. I can sit right next to her and help her do that. In addition to being the chief enterprise architect for the state of Minnesota and the current business technology officer for the DPS, Ms. Redwing has also become a fiscal note preparer and part-time legislative liaison this session. So she's doing her best, but I'm happy to sit next to her and assist. She just had her notes prepared to
an old and gross bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Draskowski.
Well, that's fine and dandy, but the same issue still exists, whether it was her notes were from the first engrossment or the current one. That's still current law. And so, Mr. Chair, I think Representative Anderson's suggestion that we get a full line-by-line accounting with every calculation in it in front of this committee, I think that would be appropriate for this $4 million fiscal note.
Representative Anderson.
And, Mr. Chair, I just want to point out the most recent one on the 5.30, that isn't even related. There should be no state cost. That is all dealing with the manufacturers. So clearly this fiscal note was drafted here.
No.
And this has serious problems. And I am concerned that we have a fiscal note that was drafted on things that doesn't even pertain to the state, and there should be no state cost at all.
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, the fiscal note was not prepared to current law. The fiscal note was prepared to the language being added in the third engrossment, House File 3463, between lines 7.25 and 7.34.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Ms. Red Wing initially referenced 3.30 as part of her analysis that had a problem. Then she corrected herself and said, no, it's actually 5.30. And when you look at the language at 5.30, that's actually dealing with a policy law change and has nothing to do with the fiscal costs. So even in the corrected version, she's notating something that has nothing to do with state costs at all. So you have developed a fiscal note that isn't based on what state cost would be. You've developed it off of policy language that has nothing to do with the state at all.
Mr. Chair.
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, changes in state policy require, in order to be complied with, changes in state technology systems. So she's referencing the policy change that necessitates a technology change in order to actually be carried out.
Representative Anderson.
No, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Eichten, this has nothing to do with the state making a change in their software or change in anything that they would need to do on this piece.
To the testifier.
Matt, do you want to direct me to the piece, and perhaps Ms. Red Wing can give her a deeper explanation so that we can all be on the same page as to what the bill requires? Line 3.30, I believe. 5.30.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you. So, Mr. Eichten, as you proceed forward, the question again was, it was $275,000 last year when I brought the bill for printing duplicate titles, and now it's going to cost the taxpayer, according to this agency, $4 million to print original titles. And I'm really confused why we have massive inflation in the costs that the department is communicating to the people.
And to the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the fiscal note was prepared to reflect the costs of implementing every provision of the bill. Ms. Red Wing managed to get through two, and there was some confusion about line references. But if she could get through all of the provisions of the bill that are fiscal noted here, not just the title printing provision, every provision, we're hoping to help you see what the ramifications are of the policy changes, all of the policy changes in the bill, not just the title printing.
Well, with
Representative.
With that, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Draskowski.
With that, Mr. Eichten, I hope when Ms. Red Wing goes through, she will also point out why the estimate was based on 1,490 hours last year for the duplicate titles. And in the fiscal note, it says 31,000 hours for addressing the original titles. So, there seems to be a problem here at headquarters, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, she'd be happy to do that, but I want to reiterate once again that what was fiscal noted last year was one provision related to printing of duplicate titles. What is fiscal noted in this bill is several provisions that go well beyond printing titles. So it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
And again, I think as Ms. Redwood makes her way back, I appreciate the comments from Mr. Eichten. As I look at the list of items that they wanted to get corrected in this unbelievable estimate of $4 million to get all this fixed, some of this I see the repeal of the $2 late fee, and you are showing this as I understand it, before the MNLARS rollout, there were very few $2 late fees coming into DVS. And now you've got
a fiscal note that shows almost $400,000 to increase, to hit your $4 million mark, you're sort of looking at that as lost revenue when you should have really never even recognized that. So you really received $400,000 of extra revenue during the Minlars rollout because it was such a poor job that they had no option but to pay the $2 dealer fee. That, to me, shouldn't even be part of this because it was revenue that you should have never received. And also, all the revenue, extra revenue that was associated with the expedited titles that really isn't even a part of this, those were extra revenues that were taken in by DBS that I know we talked about at the steering committee last week, that the state is still providing as a standalone state only is getting the $20 fee for expedited titles. That is also new revenue that is coming into DBS that other deputy register offices were enjoying and performing that service on their behalf for the last several years. And also, again, we paid last year to have the title services. We appropriated that money last year, with, as Representative Draskowski was saying, for the duplicative titles that are, I guess, now coming out this August, as was presented to testimony in our meeting last week in our steering committee. So it seems like you're double-dipping a little bit here on some of those things that I question should be really in this $4 million fiscal note appears to be inflated. And I think that's what we're all concerned about. So, Ms. Redwing, if you could – I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, that's it for me.
Oh, to the testifiers, any comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I can just respond in reference to the $2 late fee that is required by statute that we collect $2 as an incentive to get dealer paperwork in. We are more than happy to share with this committee the amount of money that we collected on the $2 late fee, and we will provide that information to the committee. The other items, I think, as far as expedited title, is not part of this bill, and we're not necessarily in a position to talk specifically about that, although I know Representative Baker has made those comments before and made his concerns around that. He stated that in previous committee. And so, again, those are statutory requirements that we are required to follow. The fees are the same there. The fees are collected in the structure that is set out in statute. And if there's anything additional that you need for me to clarify on those two pieces, I'm certainly able to. I just wanted to affirm that the $2 late fee has been collected, and we will provide that information to the committee so they can see where that money has come to. The money that comes out of that $2 late fee is directed into the vehicle services operating account, is not directed into Minlars. So we do have several mechanisms and several areas where we are directed by statute on where that funding needs to go.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, and again to Director Olson, one of my questions might be then, too, if you can provide us, when you are providing maybe more of a breakout, if we don't finish it all up today, as to what the dollar amount was taken in by the DVS with expedited services and the money that was taken in since the Minlars rollout. And you have stated, too, that it was a statutory thing that you are required by law to provide that service. Why and when was it decided then to take it away from the deputy registrar's offices?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it was always the intention with the rollout of Minlars is that expedited services would be offered after the initial rollout. Unfortunately, with the challenges that we faced after the initial rollout, it was difficult to get expedited services set up when there were so many other conflicting issues that had to be taken care of and other priorities. This is definitely, we know and understand that it's a top priority for deputy registrar offices. We are more than willing to work with them to figure out a process around that. I know the deputies have had to deal with a lot of challenges as well, and so they are similar to us in that they are trying to prioritize the work and figure out exactly where our resources and time and effort should go. But I have always said I'm open to hearing their concerns. We have an executive steering committee that meets once a week. This is our mechanism to hear back from the deputies on what their priorities are, what they need to have done, and how we can make sure that we can accommodate those in a timely fashion. So we will continue to have those conversations, and we'll continue to work with them to make sure that this service can be provided again.
And my final comment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
I know we're lacking time here, but as stated in our steering committee meeting last week, then you will still be ready to go with October 1st with the Deputy Registrar's Office to offer the duplicate titles?
To the test buyer. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, we are looking for all available avenues to complete on time, but we are trending late, as I testified at an earlier update. We are trending late at this time, but we are trying to look at all avenues to modify scope or modify our ability to deliver by bringing on parallel teams to and as we're recruiting new team members to backfill on our staff that are consultants, making sure that we can advance this.
Mm-hmm. Representative Baker.
And follow up, I guess. I don't recall that being clearly stated in our meeting last week. I think that that was one of the services that was sort of dictated to the MNLARS or the process last year with legislation. So that hopefully should not have lost its mark or its goal from this whole other mess that was going on. So I just want to know, what does that mean? We've been delayed and kind of pushed along, and so, yeah, we're getting a little ornery. I apologize. But there's a lot of rebuilding trust in this service with us, and I think we're doing better. But this is one right now that's really got us in a mess, in a pickle, and we just want to know, if you tell us August 1st, a week ago, we want to make sure it's going to be dang close to August 1st. And don't come to us with a surprise announcement again that I guess it's going to be December 1st, when a week ago we were told it was going to be here on August 1st. So, again, we're running out of time, and I appreciate that. I hope to get some hard, fast dates when this thing is coming up. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Detmer. And then we're going to take action on this. We're against the hard deadline at noon, and we have one more bill that we need to get out of here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I've come across this in my district where if you have a special plate on your vehicle, whether it's veterans or disabled plates or whatever they are, is that the auto dealers are telling the new, if you're purchasing a new vehicle or leasing a new vehicle, that there's going to be a big delay before you can put your special plates or veterans plates onto your new vehicle. And what they're saying is, what I come across here is the deputy registrar saying that if you purchase the new vehicle in April, it's going to be not until August where you can take your existing special plates and put them on your new vehicle. They're going to issue some new plates, and then later on down the line, you take those new plates in to have your plates put on your new tabs put on your new vehicle. So what's happening here? Is this quickly? So
To the test buyer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is one of the challenges that we have with the MNLARS system, is the ability to transfer special plates from an existing vehicle to a new vehicle. We have come up with some options for customers to be able to use in the interim, and I think that's what you're speaking to, is we issue a passenger plate. We tell that customer, hang on to your plates. We ask the customers to fill out a card and send it to us. And when that functionality is available, then we will get that into the system. We'll notify the customer that now is the time you can go in and actually get that plate transferred to your vehicle. This has been ongoing since we launched. And so it is definitely a high priority on our list of issues that we need to fix on the MNLARS system.
Thank you.
Final comment, Representative Baskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Redwing and Director Olson, can this committee get your commitment that we will get a fully redrafted fiscal note that is directly and accurately reflective of this version of the bill we have in front of us today, broken out by section of the bill, cost for each section of the bill with full detail for each section?
To the test buyers.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the Department of Public Safety is the agency responsible for putting together these fiscal notes, and we will get that information to you.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Petersburg, any Final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so you see, this is a complex question, and adds to a lot of confusion. Hopefully the department doesn't have as much confusion as we've seen today. But thank you for your support, and please support the bill.
With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 3463, as amended, be referred to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Well, we've all been dealing with expensive transportation bills this morning. Mine is $3,800 for a new transmission on my Chevrolet Equinox.
Oh, no.
So anyway, my apologies for being late. I expect we'll have another meeting later this week to deal with other bills, including Clark Johnson's bill.
With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.